Get ready for primetime, powered from the Sereno Cigar Company studio in North Carolina. It's episode 7 of the Primetime Show. This week, we're going to relax and enjoy as we welcome our special guest, Enrique Sanchez of 1502 Cigars. In our Debonair Ideal segment, we will talk boxing. And in our deliberation segment, we're going to look back at the FDA regulations that went in 1 year ago and reflect and see where we're at. The Cigar Coop Primetime Show is brought to you by Saga Cigars. Saga Cigars, makers of the Saga Golden Age cigar. The Golden Age is a cigar that takes you back to the classic days of cigar smoking. Through six generations of experience of the Reyes family, the Saga Golden Age delivers a timeless blend that uses the nobility of the tobacco to bring you the perfect balance of power and flavor. It narrates better than words the histories of a family's tradition in tobacco, delivering a cigar much like the ones they used in the times of Hemingway. Saga Golden Age is a full-bodied, full-flavored Dominican Puro. With tobaccos from one farm, the blend features a Corojo 2006 wrapper and filler from the original Cuban seeds grown in the Dominican Republic. Available in four sizes at an affordable price, the Saga Golden Age is sure to please and take you back on a journey to yesteryear. We're also sponsored by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And by Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars has been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Try the new Sanduro line featuring the Sanduro Maduro, the Sanduro Claro, and the Sanduro Colorado, rated in the top 25 cigars of the year by Cigar Aficionado for 2016. Visit their entire line of premium cigars at VilligerCigars.com. Well, we've made it. Episode 7 of the Primetime Show. Will Cooper from the Sereno Cigar Company studio in North Carolina, and I'm joined by my illustrious co-host, Mr. Aaron Loomis of Developing Paris Palettes. Alan, boy, tongue twisted tonight. Aaron, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. We're not going to do parrot reviews until next year, but yeah, we're looking into it.
Yeah, there you go. We're going to bring on Enrique in a minute. Apologize for a little bit of the delay here, but I think we have a really good show tonight. We're going to have Enrique on. We're going to talk a little bit of boxing as well. I know it's something that is probably more near and dear to Enrique and I than you, but I think when Aaron signed up, he knew I was going to talk boxing from time to time.
I'm fine with that. I like fighting.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I know we have another FDA segment, but I thought we would look at, it is a year since the regulations were announced, and I kind of wanted to do a little bit of reflection on that tonight. So without further ado, we have the founder and CEO of Global Premium Cigars, makers of the 1502 brand, Mr. Enrique Sanchez. Enrique, welcome to Primetime.
Hey, Cuba, Aaron. Thank you very much for having me over. It's always an honor to be with you guys.
Well, and first of all, you know, I got to thank Enrique because I gave him the wrong date for the show. And I realized it like Sunday night, Monday morning. So he was very accommodating to come on Thursday night. So thank you very much for that.
It's always my pleasure.
No, we really appreciate it. Really appreciate it. You know, so Enrique, it has been, you know, I think I know you now for 5 years. There's a question I actually haven't asked you. I don't think I've asked you it, but I kind of want to ask you it tonight. How did you actually ever get into the cigar business?
I think you have never asked me that question before. That's weird.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I could either that or my brain is. We've talked so much, I forgot, and I don't think I did. That's why.
Well, you know what they say: it's always the first time for everything.
Yep. Either way, I think it's good for maybe some of the audience who hasn't heard you. Yeah, maybe you could give us a little background how you got into it.
To be honest, Coop, I'm here by mistake. Believe it or not, great mistake. To be honest. Cigar has been my passion for almost 30 years, and I've been enjoying cigar for that long. And I got a meeting with Don Nestor Plasencia, and something related. I had this beautiful business idea, but nothing with cigars. So I'm there pitching my idea to him. I remember his face. He's always very calm, smoking his cigars, listening to me very careful. And after like 20 minutes, he's like, give me stop, and I'm like, It's like, they get a business that ain't going to go anywhere. And like, geez, there was 6 months of investment or researching everything. And tried to persuade him. And he's like, don't waste your time. Don't waste my time. That's not flying. And I'm like, oh, well, at least I tried. And of course, he did turn the table on me. I said, why don't you make your own cigar? I'm like, nah, I like to smoke everybody's cigars. And now he's the one pitching the idea to me. So I'm there trying to, no. And I will never forget his word. He looked at me directly in the eye and he's like, Enrique, give me a chance. When he told me that, it's like somebody slapped me in the face and like, wait a second. I should be in my knees asking this guy for a chance, and he's so humble to ask me for a chance.
Wow.
You know, it's like the Godfather giving him an offer you can't refuse. Mm-hmm. Just about like that one, don't let the ask you for that. It's no way you can say no. So, you know, my father's like, all right, I know what cigars are like, I know what brands there is, but I don't know anything about tobacco. And living in Nicaragua at that time, it gave me the chance to go to a studio more often and start learning all about the process. So, and I remember my first time working in the aging room, or not aging room, in the blending room, sorry. And I worked with the two master blenders, Ivan and Ricardo. And actually, the guys, let's start from scratch. Teach me as you teach a 5-year-old kid everything you have to know. So, and they had a patient, you know, going each of the type of tobacco only in Nicaragua, the part of the leaf, then it's in the texture, the smell, when you light it and you make the ring, how the combustion, how it goes far, one by one. It's like, okay, let's go only for Ometepe, for example, or go Ligero Seco Viso, and we try each of these different. Okay, now let's go for all the Ligeros and all the four reaches and do the same. That's even before you even try the tobacco, just seeing the characteristic of each of the what they have to offer, and suddenly when we start actually blending, I was blown away with what we created. I mean, that was the birth of 1502 Emerald, 1502 Ruby, and 1502 Black Gold,
which I'm smoking tonight in the Corona,
and I'm smoking the Toro.
I'm smoking the Lancero.
Yay. Wow, great minds think alike here. and you know, it was like appropriate because this is the dinner cigar, as you call it, right? The after dinner cigar.
That is correct. I create that one. You need that cigar for after a good meal, a good dinner, especially a good steak dinner, and you just want to sit down, relax, and enjoy. This is a perfect cigar.
Yeah. It really is. It really is. And, you know, the Corona is actually my favorite size of this blend. I mean, and I think everyone's got a favorite size. It's kind of fine. But I remember when you told me, you actually gave me a pre-release of this a couple of years ago, and I just fell in love with it. And I've ever since then, it's been an absolute go-to here of mine. All the Coronas have been fabulous.
I'm glad you're pleased. Corona definitely it's one of my favorite Victorias as well. It's like I always compare with a good espresso. If you don't have that much time, you know, you have all the richness right there, 45, 50 minutes, and voila, you got it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So Enrique, kind of talking about blends, because I know there's a few we haven't talked since we've been on the show. You've actually released a new regular production line, the Blue Sapphire, which is kind of a different cigar for you, correct?
It is. Actually, it's in the strength profile, it's more like the 1502 Black Gold. Yeah. But they remember the Black Gold, it has a San Andres wrapper. Double bind is truly here for Nicaragua. This one is a pure Nicaragua. More complex, just about the same strain, and the flavor is outstanding there. So it's it was released for the last year for IPCPR, and they're doing great in the market.
It was a different cigar for another reason, though, right? That was your first Parejo. It was the first that was non-box press, if I'm not mistaken.
It actually is the only one in the line that is not box press.
Right. I mean, even your Lanceros and your Perfectos are box press. But what was the rationale? Was it just you wanted to do something different? Was it that the blend worked a little better with that?
Well, it's very interesting that you ask, because when I blend, I always blend in total size. That's, for me, is the best balance. You can go up and you can go down with the total. So once we get the blend right, I got the factory make me all the different sizes, rounded and box press. So I can try one and see the other ones, see the difference between them. So it's funny because in the factory, they're always like, yeah, we know you're going to go for the box press. I'm like, we don't know yet. And they're like, yeah, it's box press. But this one didn't need a box press. It was perfect, beautiful the way it was. So it's like, no, don't touch it. Just leave it the way it is. Let's go for round. And they're like, really? Yes, I do like round cigars as well. Don't get me wrong.
No, so here's what I remember when you announced it a few days before IPCPR. And I remember getting the press release on it. And we all read the press release and, wow, it's great. You know, he's blue sapphire packaging. The cigar looks beautiful, right? I just assumed it was another box press, right? So I got to the show. I remember I get to your booth and I looked at that. My eyes just popped out. That's not a box press. And they say he who assumes makes an ass out of. Yeah, that's so. No, I thought. Now, it only came out in one size. Is that, you know, are there plans possibly to release more sizes of that?
Well, we do have a different sizes on that one. Right. They come out with a mass release in one size. Right. There were a couple in different shops, and we did release it.
Right. Kind of, you had to get it out before August 8th.
Yes, we had a bit of date, but the mass production, for sure, it was the Toro Gordo, in which I like to call it a 6x52.
That's been a strategy of yours, Enrique, I think from the beginning. Like, I know you, for example, I remember the Perfectos. You had the Perfectos, right? But you didn't have a mass release. They were just in the 1502 lounges. And then you released more of the Perfectos. So, yeah, the FDA kind of forced your hand, but it's kind of something you've done all along in a lot of ways, too.
Well, it's when you have a good strategy, I mean, keep doing it. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
And besides, I never see myself, you know, that I have to struggle every year. Hey, something new has to come out. A new blend has to come out. A new brand. And I come and get a break. There's a lot of people in which I have not tried 52 cigars for the first time yet. So, you know what? We still have a big market. We cannot be thinking of creating something new every time in Russian. And there are people, a lot of consumers in which they prefer one Vitola other than the other. And all they like different varieties in the same blend and different Vitolas. So that's what we do. We give them the alternative for them to choose what they do prefer.
And you know, that's a good point, Enrique, as well, because I think guys like Aaron and I know a lot of our audience, we have a very hardcore cigar. I mean, and this show is a little more for the hardcore cigar fan, but it is interesting when you go and I meet someone who maybe smokes cigars every day, but they still haven't smoked a 1502. I always say there's nothing like when someone tries something for the first time and falls in love with it, you know, and I've seen them fall in love with your cigar, by the way, time and time again. For me, when I watch it from the outside, it's almost emotional to me to see someone kind of get and wax poetic and just really embrace a cigar. So there's a lot of people, you're right, that probably still have not smoked the 1502 on yet.
Well, you have to keep something in mind. We're a petite brand. We're not mass producing. We are making sure that the quality is always there before anything else. Remember, as a boutique brand, we only get one chance. One mistake, it could cost our entire company. So I would like to say we play on our skin every day. So it's very important. But little by little, we're growing. Some people say a lot faster than little, but we're definitely growing. And a lot more people are starting to get introduced to cigars. And one of the great things, our statistics, at least 85% of the people that try 52 cigars for the first time always come back for more. So it's not like one-hit records and, you know, oh, it's a great cigar. You know, let me go back to the other one. No, they stick with it. And that's one of the great things, because like I said, I always prefer quality versus quantity. Mm-hmm. I know a person is smoking once and that's it, you know, I appreciate that, but if you keep staying in the line with us, you're going to experience everything that we created from the beginning for you to enjoy it.
You made a really good point, Enrique, about that one. You know, unfortunately, the way our industry is, and maybe the way life is sometimes, everyone remembers the mistake. They always will remember that mistake. And, you know, you could get all these positives, but that one mistake, they could sometimes remember that. So that's probably a very good game plan to follow in that case, because, you know, and be cognizant of that. I think that's a really good philosophy.
But besides, remember, the big companies, if they come out with something in the market and doesn't hit their expectations, they can repackage it, throw it back in the markets, and all the point, they can discount somewhere else, and, you know, say it's another line, that's it. You know, we have hundreds or I don't know how many different lines. For us, as a boutique brand, we don't have that luxury. You know, every time we come out with something, we it's like playing poker. All in. So you have to make sure you have a good hand in with you. Otherwise, you can see yourself in trouble.
Exactly. Will Cooper, Aaron Loomis. We're joined by 1502 Cigars CEO and founder Enrique Sanchez. Aaron, I know I've been monopolizing. I'll turn it over to you for a couple of questions.
Sure. On another cigar line that you came out, and I think it was last year, was the XO. How has that been doing?
Oh, well, I mean, it's let me put it this way. We're out.
There you go.
That's a good problem to have, I guess.
It's a good problem, but now we have to wait for the production number two, in which hopefully it will be ready soon. But mm-hmm. a lot of the stores, since it's a 18-year-old tobacco, you know, XO stands for extra old. Any products 18 and older in alcohol and tobacco, in all those products. So 18-year-old tobacco is not easy to find. So and that quality that we have in that tobacco. So to able to do that, we had to come out with small batches. You know, we had to get the 18, the 17, the 16, the 15 years. So when this one goes to the market, the other comes in. So every year we do release X amount of boxes. Last year we did release 1,502, you know, number.
Right.
Boxes, all in total size. And then we came out, because of the FDA, we came out with all different sizes, and they were in the market. But sadly right now we're out. And now we have to wait into the next production. You know, that's why I tell people, you know, catch it while you can, because I can't promise you that it's going to be there tomorrow. I can promise you it will be released next year, but if they're going fast, they're gone.
Yeah, and the tobacco, you can't control that. You know, it's like, you know, you just can't, you have to wait for that tobacco, obviously, you know, and if it's not 18 years old, you know. But that's kind of refreshing to hear that too, I think, as a consumer, which I am too, that, you know, hey, look, if that 18-year tobacco is not there, then me as a consumer is not getting that cigar.
Exactly. I mean, I would love to. I know my accountant will be very pleased when if somebody comes and orders, hey, give me a 1 million boxes for those. Like, I would love to sell those to you. I can't. They're none. They're not normal. You know, it's like Louis the 13th. Why is the Louis the 13th is so expensive? It's rare to find. It's over 100 years a cognac. So it's you cannot rush it. You have to wait. There's no on time. You cannot beat it. The right way, or you can do shortcuts, in which I do not.
Good for you. Good for you, Anna. You know, a lot of folks asked me, Enrique, because they saw the pictures from IPCPR of all the XO sizes, but I guess, is it similar to the Blue Sapphire, where right now the Toro has been the only one that's really had a significant release, but those other ones have had small releases and are things you can see down the road?
Yes, actually, the Toro size was the first one they released. And then we came out with a Corona Gordo, Corona Grande, actually, the right one, Lanceros, of course. Go wrong with the Lanceros, Torpedos, Perfectos, Churchill, phenomenal as well. The Salomon Conquistador. We came out with 7 different sizes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Small batches because, and you know, the funny part, it's that I had to stay without XO for at least 6 months. I was out because it's not like we rushed the production to bring those cigars out. No, no. Those were my personal stack. I had my those my cigars and was my first production. I'm going to put it away. It's no one's going to touch it. I'm going to be smoking it for a long time, just enjoying it. Now, FDA had to come surprise. They're like, oh, you know what, guys? Fuck it. We have to pack this. And I remember people in the factory like, what? Like, yeah, we have to do that right now. So they actually, what people got, it was my first production, my own cigars. Mm. So and sometimes I go to the shop and some people still have one. And they're like, you know what they have? And like,
yeah, they are getting tougher to find. I can tell you that. They're getting tougher to find.
So some of these other Vitolas for the Blue Sapphire and the XO, are those ones that may have a little bit wider distribution coming up at the trade show this year?
We're going to have to wait and see. That's, okay. That's for sure.
we got to relax and enjoy what we got now.
So talking a little about distribution, earlier this year you changed your distribution. Can you talk a little bit about what went into that process and kind of how you're distributing this, your cigars now?
Yes, we've been with Boutique Unified almost from the beginning. I mean, since with Gary Griffin before he retired. And they have been doing a great job. But suddenly we need somehow to step to the next level. And our good friend, Gene Robbins, everybody, famous Island Gene, he was kind enough to give me the push up. So we decided, we called it up and talked with Scott Suka, and we negotiated easy exit so we can see how we can expand the brand a little bit faster. Because that's the biggest problem we have is people asking me every time social media, I don't know how many texts, emails, everything I get. People asking, where can I find your cigars? I can't find it in this shop. It's like, guys, we cannot be everywhere. So, you know, it's little by little, we're growing. But I think now with the help with Jim and his sales team, we definitely will be getting out there faster. So, all the best to Scott Suka, in which he has been a true gentleman from the beginning into today. I mean, it's a person, it really inspires me as a human being and a great business person. And, you know, and now with Jim, you know, it's going to be a very interesting role.
Yeah, and Jim has been picking up some other, some of the lines and brands to do distribution with. So he's really kind of expanding that out. How has that been so far for you?
Well, we just did, I believe, less than a month ago. So mm-hmm. We're still in the transition. I mean, there's still accounts in which they're still trying to go to my old distributor to order, and we have to send it to the new distributor. So right now it's the part of accommodating things. Right. And, you know, the sales staff is getting the samples so they can try it out and see how they can go to the different accounts. They have the list of the accounts. So it's going to take a little bit of organizing in the aspect, but I believe so. It's going to be a great transition. There's no doubt.
And as they kind of kick off, taking on distribution for you, are there any certain regions that they're going to be targeting first?
Well, the good thing about using a gym distribution is that he's everywhere in the United States. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing. It's not like we're going to have to start from scratch in one place or the other. There were some regions when we were a little bit less stronger than others, and with the new team now, they knowing what to do, it's a lot easier to spread everywhere. It's like playing chess, you know. First you put the pieces together, and then you expand and you move there. So that's what we have been doing for the last years, and now it's time for move forward in that aspect.
You know, Enrique, Jim's a very interesting story to me, and I get the move too, because what he did with the Leaf the Leaf by Oscar line, and it's a great blend. But look at how many stores that cigar got into. And he didn't have a big distribution Altadis company doing that. He went and that. So I get what you're saying. What, you know, if you are able to tap into that, it's a business move. I totally get it.
Of course. You know, it's a win-win situation for everybody. I mean, in my aspect, I mean, I get access to all these numbers of accounts, which I didn't have before. And for Jim, at the same time, it's a way to expand his portfolio from one night to another. So it's definitely it's a great thing. I mean, and when you mentioned that number of accounts or how many accounts he have, not only that is how fast did he open those accounts?
Yes,
and how frequently they're rewarding for him. So yeah, I mean, he has done a great job.
There are a lot of people, big names in this industry, that haven't done that. No, I mean, who started cigar companies, and that's not, but that's just a testament to the job. I think that Jim, it's one of the most amazing distribution jobs that I've seen in a long time.
And Jim, it's being for the retailer in decades. I mean, it gave you a completely great perspective in which I didn't have. I mean, just sit down with him and start going to all the strategy we would be doing, you know, opening my mind, things I didn't thought before because I wasn't the other side as a manufacturer. So it's a great teamwork as itself. Now I need to mention that as I said before, you know, we have been great friends from the beginning. Actually, it was my fourth account I ever opened. It was my first one outside Florida. So it's and it's still open. So we're in good terms.
And I'm sorry, I hijacked that piece.
That's good. So another interesting tidbit is in regards to a lawsuit that you filed against the FDA. And I think what was interesting about that is that you didn't kind of sit on your heels and kind of wait for the CRA, the CAA, IPCPR to kind of go ahead and go to battle for you. What was it that made you kind of want to go ahead and move forward and kind of do that as a separate entity from that group?
Well, Aaron, you know what? Yes and no in your words in that aspect, because I did sit down and waited, and I waited, and I waited like everybody else, and I'm like looking around, looking backwards, like somebody's going to do something here, and it's like, and I see talking, no actions. And that's when we got together with a group of all the manufacturers, and you know, like, guys, well, if no one's going to take the first step, well, I'm not going to sit down and waiting for it. So let's go for it. And that's when we decided to go for the lawsuit. I think in the moment, you know, it was a little risky. You know, it's a boutique brand, a boutique company from a guy from Nicaragua coming to fight the FDA here in the United States. So it's, my wife was definitely a lot more nervous than I was, of course. But it has to be done. Mm-hmm. And I believe that first step opened the doors for the rest of the people to follow. I remember seeing one of the first calls that I got was Glenn. It was from Glenn at CRA. And, you know, and he congratulated me for the lawsuit. And when he threw the lawsuit, I saw him at IPCPR and I congratulated him. Mm. And I remember him telling me something, and he grabbed me by the arms. And he's like, no, Ricky, thank you. If you would have put your first move, probably we have still been talking without doing any action.
Right.
You're the one that put us in the corner so we can take action right away. And that's what we needed. I mean, it was not only that part. I mean, I sent somebody to the Dominican Republic to talk to the tobacco chamber there to start doing a lawsuit, an international lawsuit as well. I did the same in Nicaragua. So it's not like I just threw the lawsuit and said, no, I start moving myself in different parts. So this is something that will affect the entire industry. It's, you know, there will be thousands of jobs in jeopardy in those countries. So it has action that had to be done. There's no doubt whatsoever. And sadly, I was the first one to do the step, but at the same time, I do feel proud, and I see now people pushing forward, and like it's what we need. And the more funds we get, the better it is for the industry.
Yeah, and I applaud you for doing it, because I've been very critical of the industry, and I think Coop probably would say the same thing. Is just there was just too much time where nothing was really happening. It was just a lot of talk but no action. And I just don't think that there was any way that the cigar industry could win in that fashion. If you just sit back and wait for the regulations to come, you're going to get the strictest regulation that is available is going to be dropped on you. If you can't get in there and either push them back or to work with them to guide the regulations so that it fits the industry a little bit better, you're just in for a world of hurt without doing that. So I definitely applaud you for taking those steps to make that happen.
Well, a lot of people thought that I was crazy. Well, most likely that they're not mistaken. But at the same time, I've always been known for being more active than being more passive. I like to do things. As you maybe remember my statement when we sent the newsletter about the lawsuit, and they said that when I committed to this industry, I committed to make a change, to make it better. I leave something behind for my kids, for their kids as well. So when I see that was in jeopardy, I had to do something about it, and that's for sure. That's what we did. Mm-hmm.
No, I applaud you as well, Enrique, because I do believe your action probably accelerated the timetable with the industry a bit. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, they needed a little bit of kick in the butt there, I think, to make that happen.
Yeah. So, that's for folks who don't know, that's the lawsuit against the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on the deeming regulations. And from what it's Jim Robinson of, obviously, we just talked about him, and Luis Falto.
Yes.
Yep. And Luis Falto, who are in of Falto Cigars.
Yes. I know Luis makes something very interesting is that when we threw the lawsuit, I was waiting for more impact, with the FDA, more with the industry as itself. I was like, okay, well, I'm sure other people will follow. And to today, we are the only company actually, as a company, throwing a lawsuit. I'm like, okay, you know, I understand everybody lined it up with the CIA, and we all support that group as well. But, you know, if we would, other companies, especially the big ones, in which they do have a bigger budget, could have joined that as well at their own, we could have done a bigger impact. There's no doubt.
You know, I'm probably treading on water here, because I know we can't get into the specifics, but so you can shut me up. But I've been on the record saying with the industry lawsuit from the trade associations, that's never going to happen. And as I'm talking to you, that kind of is interesting, because that doesn't necessarily mean that yours won't go through. Right? So let's say they decide to not have the lawsuit, right? You guys could still muster forward with that lawsuit that you have.
Of course.
It gives you guys some control with that.
Of course. I mean, as we say in Nicaragua, grab the horse by the rein. You know, if you're not doing it, I'll do it. That's simple as that. And if something happened to theirs, and we can go forward, we would definitely do that. We also have spoken, if it's for strategic reason, we need to drop ours so they can do something better. We can do that too. We have seen different alternatives, and we always been in very close contact with them as well. It's not like, hey, you know, this is ours. No. It's all one industry, and whatever we do or don't do will affect all as at all. So we have to be very careful with that.
Sure. Absolutely. So Enrique, we're kind of getting to, I guess it's IPCPR is like 6 or 7 weeks away. Are you going to be in your own booth? Are you going to be with Jim Robinson this year?
Oh yeah, we're going to be with Jim. There's no doubt whatsoever. We'll be in the same area.
So my question is, are you going to be wearing the suit and Jim's still going to be wearing the island shirt and you guys going to be in the same booth?
No. This year we did something very unique. We decided to change look. I'll be wearing and he's going to, the funny part is him wearing the suit.
I'll pay to see that. You know, I got a Jim Robinson Island Jim story. I'll tell it. last year I was with Jim, and Jim was handing out the Island Jim sunglasses to everybody, right? In the middle of him handing it out, he comes up to me and he just pops a pair of Island Jim sunglasses on me. And then I disappear and go home. Except there was one problem. That was the real Island Jim pair of sunglasses. All those other ones are fakes. And he needed those back. And he is going crazy trying to find me because he needs those sunglasses. I guess there was a prescription in it, whatever. I had no idea. So yeah, I had. So I did. And Jim was kind enough to replace it, you know, with the, you know, the substitute sunglasses. So yeah, that would be pretty cool.
That will be Jim definitely. That's for sure.
Either that, or you got to do wahoo.
Wahoo!
There you go.
Yeah. So other than the possibility of some different Vitolas for the Blue Sapphire and the XO, are there any other surprises that you may be presenting at the trade show?
Maybe. Maybe yes, maybe no. I always work. I mean, I always blending. I love doing that. I mean, for me, I don't see it as a work. I don't tell my kids about it because they think I don't work. I only smoke cigars. But yeah, but yeah, always blending. Always looking to find that specific flavor, that characteristic that is not out there and it's missing. And it's very interesting because I always describe this. Somebody I was asking me about the blending, how we do that, and everything. And my approach is like, okay, how many chefs are in the world? I know thousands. I don't know X amount of chefs. How many great chefs are in the world? And they're like, well, they're not that many. Well, okay. So this a lot to do with blending tobacco as well. I mean, we all get the same material, some better than the other. That's for sure. I had the privilege of working with Placencia, which they give me access to premium or the premium. But it's like the chef is saying, oh, this my recipe is better because I have this magic salt or magic spice that nobody else has. No. It's just about the same. If you go to one factory, you go to the other. Everybody tells you we had the Willy Wonka room in which we make the magic is completely different. No, what you do with those different tobacco, those different characteristics, how you put them together and make something great. And that's the beauty in blending. And that's something for me, it's a passion that I do it every day. And always now enjoying my cigar, I smoke all the cigars. I like to also be trying the different blends that I'm creating. And you know, it's the only way to find out if they're great or not is to try it.
That's right.
No, all the way.
Yep.
All right. So, Will Cooper, Aaron Loomis here. I think we'll do Aaron. Anything else we want to cover here?
Nope. I think we're all set.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll do a quick word from our sponsors, and then we'll get into our second segment, our Debonair Ideal segment. Our sponsors are JRE Tobacco. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley of Honduras, Julio R. Aroa took on the challenge of growing tobacco from those original seeds, and in 2000, he reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years of experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the Aroa Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products with the authentic Corojo leaf. Now with JRE Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing that authentic Corojo leaf. Tadascan offers a mild to medium cigar in both a Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar that is available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is a 100% authentic Corojo Puro that represents the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. And brought to you by Cornelius and Anthony. If you're going to be wanted for something, be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do five generations ago. And that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. Using the finest tobaccos, Cornelius and Anthony brings to you the Daddy Mac, the Venganza, the Meridian, and the Cornelius. You can find them at your local tobacconist. Well, we're going to be getting into our next segment. This is the Debonair Ideal segment, sponsored by Debonair House, makers of the Debonair line of cigars, as well as Indian Motorcycle Ultra Premium Cigars. And for folks who are going to be in the Myrtle Beach area this weekend, Mr. Phil Zenge is going to be around for Bike Week, from what I hear. So if you're down in Myrtle Beach, be sure to check them out. Be sure to see our friends over at the Cigar Shop as well. But in the Debonair Ideal segment, we talk, basically what we do is we have the conversations that people may have in a cigar lounge. So the idea here is cigars are a conduit to these conversations in life. And, you know, you're in a cigar lounge and you talk about a variety of topics. Well, I'm Shanghaiing this one because I love boxing. And Phil Zenge loves boxing. I know Aaron's not quite as big up on the boxing, but he's a good sport here tonight. And Enrique, I know you and I, we kind of have this connection to one boxer. Your connection is a lot stronger than myself, but that's Chocolatito Gonzalez.
Yes, that's for sure. I mean, I remember Chocolatito when he was still fighting in Nicaragua. We used to go to the boxing fights, and we were first row, smoking our cigar, having a drink, watching him fight. I mean, of course, that can never happen again, but because of the cigar, because we're not allowed to smoke cigars and boxing anymore. But, you know, it was a great thing. Sadly, the last fight, I mean, I'm sure you will agree with me in that one, it was very unfair to him. He should have not lost the fight. I mean, that was a very... It's one of the things in boxing, and you're like, come on, give me a break. That's, he fought like a warrior, and you know, and they gave the belt to somebody else. I'm like, not quite happy as it should be, but it is what it is.
I thought that was a dangerous fight he was taking, though. I do think he got robbed of the decision. I think every fighter is going to be, for the most part, unless you're Floyd Mayweather, and I think his day will come, they're going to be on that end of a decision. Yeah, but they're going to be on that end of a decision with that. But, I mean, I was surprised because it was a majority decision that, you know, in terms of that, I was surprised he wasn't, you know, one of the – that meant one of the cards was a draw, and the other two went to his, I think it's a, I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not even going to try to, but he's from Thailand, right? And the reason is these Thailand boxes are boxing is very big in Thailand, especially in the lighter weight classes, like the flyweight and the super flyweight. So, he was fighting a very good fighter too, but I do think he got robbed on that. But I guess the rematch talks are in play right now.
Well, I guess so, but still, I mean, it's the difference was his score. He was unbeatable. I mean, and you can see in the fight, I mean, four hits right in his face, and to the third one, he got punked down.
Yeah.
And after that, when you see how many throw and how many landed, he had double hits of the opponent, and still they give the fight to him. And like, really, if you would have come to me, it's like when they're waiting for the score, it's like I would have bet everything I had that he was gonna get a fight. And suddenly, I'm like, what? I mean, I couldn't even watch the Triple G fight after that. I'm like, really, I was so disappointed. It's like this is not the boxing that I remember. Well, of course, we all remember that fight was Alexis Arguello and Brian, the first one. The second one was fair enough. But the first one with the water, no, give me my water, no, the other.
Special water.
Special water.
Special vitamin.
You know, and then he knocks the other guy, Alex Arguello, down. And you're like, really? This is really happening in boxing? I thought that we passed that part. No, we're back to the same spot. So it's a sad story. I'm sure Chocolatito will rise from this. There's no doubt. Being a Nicaraguan, he's a true fighter. There's no doubt. I mean, you have now only Alexis Arguello's combinations there, but you also see his heart. And I remember Alexi Arguello when he interviewed, and he said that you can show a person how to balance, how to throw punches, how to do combinations, how to take balance away from the other opponent. But when you're down with your right hand broken in the from the first round and getting up and knocking the opponent down, you cannot teach that. It's either you're born with it or you're not. And that was Alexi Arguello, and I see that a lot in Chocolatito. So I'm sure he will race and he will come stronger than ever.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually brought up Alexis Arguello too, because that was something I wanted to hit on as well. You know, Arguello, he came along at a time right after when Sugar Ray Leonard had retired, I guess, again. There was a point where Sugar Ray Leonard retired. That was when he had the long five-year layoff. And then Arguello had won the lightweight title, and he went up to challenge Pryor. And for folks who don't know, Aaron Pryor was an undefeated junior welterweight, fought out of Cincinnati. So that was really a super fight that was taking place in 82. I remember it was one of the last fights I watched with my grandfather. I remember, I mean, it was a 14, it went, that's when they went 15 rounds. It was an epic 14th round there where, you know, and the heart was there. I definitely just saw the, I mean, and I think a lot of us, even though Pryor was the US fighter, a lot of us, I know, were rooting for Arguello that night because there was such a heart of that guy.
I mean, if you recall the fight, it's Alexi had him. He was hit. He was completely. He was saved by the belt.
Yeah.
He went to his corner. Alexi, he was ready to go after him and finish the fight. He gets his special water, and he goes up like a bull and knocks Alexi Arguello down.
Yeah.
That's what he like. Alexi Arguello was like, "What happened here?"
Are you old enough? Do you remember? Did you watch that fight? Were you old enough for that fight? Because I remember. I was.
You know what?
I was 14 or 15 when that fight was on.
You know what? I to be honest, I do not remember seeing the fight as the moment it was taken. But I do remember my family, especially my dad, screaming at the TV when the fight started. All the fight, and actually, I think it was the only time I saw my dad crying after Alexi Arguello lost the fight. So it's I like I said, I do not remember that time. I mean, for me, it was many other things more important, but that memory will always stick with me.
And that was before the revolution. That fight, right? The revolution happened, or was it right around the revolution?
The revolution was 79.
So, okay, the revolution was already on. So the revolution was already going on at that point.
Yes. Yes, so it was a way for Nicaragua to scream to the world, we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
With all the fighting and everything.
Compare Chocolatito, I mean, because they're both Nicaraguan icons. Compare Chocolatito to Arguello. Arguello was definitely the Nicaraguan icon from what I know, but would you say Chocolatito is now getting to a point where he's at that level of Arguello in terms of being beloved, or do you think he still's got more to go?
That's a very tough question because, I mean, Alexi Arguello was we always nicknamed it the champ. He always going to be the champ. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter if he's a great fighter in front of him, he always going to be remembered as the fight, as the champ. So it's a very unfair way to compare it, especially in the time frame. But remember, the ones that pick up Chocolatito, they actually put that his nickname Chocolatito was Alexi Arguello. His father, Chocolatito's father, a nickname was Chocolate. So Alexi Arguello was like, okay, so you Chocolate, you Chocolatito.
Oh, okay.
And so Alexi Arguello was the one that they got the Chocolatito at an early age and started training him and start touching. So that's where you see a lot of his style in Chocolatito.
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting there. Now, Arguello, he retired and he fought the Sandinistas, right?
Yes. First he was with the Sandinistas, then he retired, then he fought against the Sandinistas.
But eventually he came back, I mean, eventually he had a career in politics, right, after that?
Yeah, he was the mayor of Managua.
Now, what was his political position at that point? Was he still against the Sandinista government, or was that, what was that position there?
No, actually, they actually ran as Managua mayor was the Nicaragua, with the Sandinista flag. So he was with the Sandinistas.
Okay, interesting. And, you know, he was, they said he committed suicide, right? But I guess there's some question on that, right?
There have been a lot of gossip about it. You know, it's one of the things I feel like sometimes it's better not to ask.
Yeah.
Whatever the answer is, we're not going to get the champ back. So, you know, it was a sad ending in the aspect, but he did leave a great legacy. And he did put the Nicaraguan flag very high in the air. And that's one of the things that we always have to remember for him.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Did I got another question just on boxing in general in Nicaragua. Is it a sport that has just remained popular in Nicaragua, or is it one of those sports where, you know, you have the Arguello and you have the Chocolatito and it's been popular because of those guys?
Well, he had always boxing, and sure, it has happened not only in Nicaragua and everywhere, even here in the United States. It's a sport mainly for the poor people. I mean, that's how they start. I remember one that it used to be a world champion as well in Nicaragua, was in the 90s. Can't remember. Slipped my mind. I remember having lunch with him one time in Bespuesto de las Mercedes, and he told me, Enrique, you know what? It's a very cruel sport because we fight because we are hungry all our life. And when we make it to the top, we cannot eat everything we want because we have to stay in shape. So it's a very cruel one, if you put it that way. I mean, you never see a rich a kid becoming a great fighter. They have to come from underneath because they have to have the hunger, hunger to go up, to succeed. I mean, you saw that in Emmanuel Pira Duran. I mean, it's a great example. Tito Trinidad, I mean, all those great fighters. I mean, they came from very poor environment, and they had to fight their way up in that. So yeah, Nicaragua boxing has been always been very popular. Of course, it went to the top of the hill when Alex Arguello was in his prime. But since that time, we've always been a boxer country.
Did at the trade show last year? Did you get to meet Chocolatito? Chocolatito.
Well, I didn't see him in the trade show, but I've seen him in Nicaragua many
okay.
times.
Okay, have you met him? Have you met him?
Yeah.
I did not get a chance to meet him at the trade show because I was interviewing someone when he came to the booth at Drew Estate. So I was very bummed, but I couldn't break a commitment. And it was actually a pretty big interview I was doing at the time. So but part of me wanted, and as much as I wanted to do that interview, it was part of me was I really wanted to go meet Chocolatito because he's my favorite pot. Despite what our sponsor, the cigar shop people, the co-owners think of that, but not Mark Boley, by the way, but the other two guys. But yeah, they bust on me saying boxing is a dead sport. I don't think it's a dead sport at all. I think actually it had a valley. Right. It's not a peak. I think it was in a valley. I think Chocolatito has done a lot to help that sport a lot. I mean, for a flyweight, Enrique, in the U.S. to get on a national broadcast, it's unheard of. We haven't had a flyweight we haven't had a flyweight here since, like, I think Michael Carbajal. You got to go back to in the 90s. So it was a big deal for him to headline cards at you know, or be co-headliners in it here, especially at Madison Square Garden. I could see in the Forum in Englewood to some extent because they get the Mexican boxers come on up there.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's something unbearable. And actually, he was so good that they couldn't hide it anymore. They had to put him in that situation. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, it's a fall. Everybody falls in life. I mean, he will get up and he will race stronger than before.
Exactly. I got one more question. Who are some of the other fighters right now you've admired?
Oh wow! It's GPG. He's definitely in his peak. I mean, that's one of the beauty. Every time I see Chocolatito, first Chocolatito, then Triple G. He definitely, it's somebody that I do admire a lot. I love the way he fight. Like he said, I fight like Mexican, always going forward, not never stepping back. So I will say after Chocolatito, I will go for Triple G.
Wow. You know, and I think the way boxing is right now, he will have a title belt. What I really liked about Gonzalez, Chocolatito, is you know, he was just a true champion. He wasn't a manufactured paper champion as far as things go. He really, I mean, he controlled that flyweight division. He went up to super flyweight. I kind of hope he doesn't go much further than that, because it's you know, when you start putting on body mass 10 to 15 pounds above 112, I don't know what's going to happen. So I'd really love to see him, you know, like I said, but I think we will see him back, and he's not going to be disappearing. Like, sometimes when a fighter loses, it's tough for them to come back. I don't think we're going to see that with this kid.
No, that, but for sure, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's tough for him to go up. I mean, especially with his height. I don't know if you see him in person, but he's kind of short.
Yeah, he is.
He has his limits of how he can go in weight. So, but as what he has done, he has done a great things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Pacquiao did it, but he's taller, different body frame. So it's a different story, I think, with Manny Pacquiao, who was a flyweight.
Oh, completely.
Yeah, and I have my doubts how he got to that weight, too. I'll just keep it at that. I'll just keep it at that. It's not, yeah.
Well, if you see my weight, I should be a heavyweight champion, you know. Well,
right.
Well, except the champion heavyweight, you know, that would be.
Exactly. Aaron, I know you're not the boxing guy, but anything else you want to add on here?
You brought up Duran, and I actually just last week I watched the movie Hands of Stone, which is the story of Roberto Duran.
Great movie.
And Enrique was talking about, you know, how they grew up, and it showed it very well in that movie how he kind of you know, he was fighting as a little kid, and kind of went up that way. And after he beat Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, he wanted to have some time to just kind of enjoy his life, like, you know, all the money and the fame and the status that he had achieved, he wanted to be able to enjoy that. But his promoter got him right back into that second fight, and he didn't really have a chance to enjoy it. And he had to really, really scramble to train and make weight for that second fight. And, you know, I think it just kind of took its toll on him. And he kind of just, it was a tough time for him after that, you know, that second fight, the way it ended. He really had a battle through kind of getting his head right again to come back, but he did come back, and he did very well after that as well.
Yes, indeed. I'm beside it. That's, like you said, it's a great movie. I did enjoy it. Actually, we did watch it with all my kids, my wife, everybody here in the house. Like, family time.
Yeah.
It's a movie. So it's, it tells you a lot of how true boxers come along. It's nice for them. Like I said, right. They have to fight the way to weigh up. And it's a very tough one.
You know,
I did watch another movie. I watched another movie last week that was Creed, and I know you like it, Will. I was a little disappointed.
What?
What? I was disappointed. It was completely the opposite of everything we've talked about and everything that was Rocky was about. It was just everything was so easy for him to go through that. I was disappointed. I'm sorry. I know, Will.
That was one of the greatest movies of all time.
It was not Rocky One or Rocky Two, man. It just wasn't.
But it was Creed. It was Creed.
It was Creed, but it was a little too much. Like, you know, I understand he was supposed to to Mexico and fought his way up, but he just got that title shot way too easy.
He got it way too easy, but at least, you know, here's the thing, they didn't make it like an exhibition fight like Rocky Balboa, where he fought Mason Dixon, who's Antonio Tarver. They didn't make it like it, because there's no such thing as an exhibition. You fight for the title, you don't fight for it. At least the kid fought for the title. Mm-hmm. I loved the whole setting in England for that fight, too. I thought that was a perfect setting for that.
Yeah. And it was just a little bit too, maybe it was just the times that this, you know, movie took place, and it didn't take me back to the Rocky style, where Rocky really struggled to like build himself up and get into the fight. It just seemed like everything was a little bit just too easy for things to happen.
I know what you're getting to. It was because of the chicken, wasn't it? The chicken was too slow.
Well, that's the thing. Too slow. Yeah. Where do you find those slow chickens? Those slow chickens are the ones that end up at Kentucky Fried Chicken, right?
Right. I thought there was one mistake they made with that movie, and that was no Paulie. I would not have killed Paulie off. You would have had a whole dynamic with Paulie and the Creed character.
Right.
Now, I heard the guy who plays Paulie, I don't want to say he's in bad health, but Burt Young, I heard he's not maybe – I don't know if he can act anymore. It was maybe part of the reason is what I've heard. Or you know.
He died in The Sopranos. He couldn't come back.
Remember that in The Sopranos? Oh, he kept coughing, that coughing fit he had in there. Oh. That was it, but it was no, so there was no Paulie, which I think you needed that. What made all the Rocky movies was Paulie, and he was that foil for Rocky, and Rocky didn't have that foil. The guy who would add comic relief, just say ridiculous things and just do some ridiculous things. So that was one thing why I can't put it up as the best Rock, but I really enjoyed the movie. I'll disagree with you on that.
Yeah, it just did.
It was a nice movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch Hands of Stone and then you watch Creed, this. Two completely opposite sides of the spectrum.
One is just a true story. The other one, it's a Hollywood movie. It's quite different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is Duran became a favorite of mine, is what I'll say. Again, I watched a lot of boxing with my dad and my grandfather and my uncle. And I was a Sugar Ray guy. But in that second fight, when Leonard was showboating against Duran, it was really annoying me, right? I started rooting for Duran in that fight, right? Even though I knew by like round six he wasn't gonna win the fight, but you know Leonard's doing all the showboating in it, and I became a Duran fan. Duran lost like two or three fights in a row after that. He came to New York City in the summer. He fought this kid named Davey Moore, a local kid for the junior middleweight title, and won it. And the Garden was absolutely electric that night. I wasn't in the Garden, but I watched it on a closed circuit, and you could feel it was a big night when that was when he won his third world title that night. So,
there's always some passion in the sporting. It's incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot.
And ESPN did one of those 30 for 30s with Duran and Sugar Ray. It was a really good episode. So,
but they didn't. I never felt Duran answered the question that Leonard wanted to hear. Why did you quit? It was very, very interesting now.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that answer will ever come.
Yeah, because Leonard went down to Panama to do that.
Yep.
Interesting. Anyway, Dad, I think we have to do boxing talk from time to time. As Phil Zenge's a big boxing fan as well, who sponsors this segment. But that is the Debonair Ideal. For this week, we're going to get into a quick of what Aaron and I have been smoking during this show. This is brought to you, friends, at the Cigar Shop. The Cigar Shop, for the best in premium handmade cigars, you visit their locations in Monroe, North Carolina, and South Carolina's largest walk-in humidor in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. You can find them on the web at www.thecigarshop.com. Enrique, you actually know one of the co-owners of the Cigar Shop. It's a guy by the name of Mark Boley
on cigars. Of course, Mark.
Yep, and he now is. Yep, he's partners with a couple of folks down at that store in Myrtle Beach. He said to say hello to you, and the cigars are doing very well there.
Awesome! Can't wait to go visit him. He's a great guy.
Yeah, and you know they are a sponsor of the show, but I'll say they are. That is a fantastic shop. You will be very. Anyone who's in Myrtle Beach, I advise them to go down there.
Can't wait to visit myself.
Yep, they're right across the street from Harley Davidson of Myrtle Beach, and they actually have a Harley Davidson bicycle in the humidor.
Nice.
Yeah,
can
it's
we
really
ride it in the humidor.
A bike, an actual bike in the humidor. They bought a Harley Davidson bike from across the street, and they put it in the humidor.
Can we ride it in the humidor? Or just to show it?
Yeah, it's just for show. I think you can sit. I think they'll let you sit on it. I think they'll let you sit on it, but you got to kind of. Yeah, so we have to get Enrique on it, but yeah, they have Bike Week going down there right now, and it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's like Sturgis, but it's a Sturgis type event in Myrtle Beach. I was at Bike Week last year in Myrtle Beach, And yeah, it's a big deal. So they've been very, very busy there. But we're actually smoking a couple of cigars that 1502's carried from there. It is the 1502 Black Gold. And I smoked the Corona. Enrique smoked the Lancero. And Aaron smoked the Toro.
Yeah.
Aaron, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this labeling this as an after-dinner cigar is perfect. I would – the if you had to pick one word to describe the cigar, I would call it dark. Because you get a lot of dark wood. Dark roast coffee, even dark chocolate in there. But what's nice about it is the retrohale is really smooth and creamy. So it's, you kind of get different notes in the different style. So a lot of dark flavors in the mouth, but through the retrohale, it's nice and creamy. And I'm drinking a rye whiskey with this, and it matches up really well with the cigar. So I would now next time I have to have a steak dinner, then I'll light this up, have a little bit of whiskey with it and see how that all matches up. But I think it would be a fantastic kind of combination there. It's a really nice cigar. I like it.
I agree.
I'm sorry. I'm glad you're very pleased, Aaron. Actually, you just tried that flavor profile very well.
Thanks.
And something you have to take in consideration is when I blend, I always blend flavor. The most important one. I always make sure that strength never overpowers the flavor. Doesn't matter if it's a full body cigar like the Black Gold or the Blue Sapphire. The most important part of it.
Yep.
That's one of the key things.
And in honor of Enrique, I lit the cigar and then I cut the cap, and that's how I got started.
I didn't do that. I should have done that. And I usually will do that. I saw it. How did that start, Enrique?
It's a Cuban friend. When I started smoking cigars in early 90s, he was the one that told me to do that way. And from that time, I keep doing it. And when I do it the other way around, it's not the same. That first draw, I mean, I would call the virgin draw, that the cleanest draw you're ever going to have. When you light a cigar and then you cut it. That's perfect.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it took me a little while to get used to doing it. But I have been able to do it. It was more like I had to go and drive a stick shift when I haven't driven a stick shift in a while. Once you get the hang of it, it is I agree. It's fun to do it. I didn't do it this time. But I agree. It's the dark is very, very prevalent on it. You know, when I grew up in New York City, they would sometimes make coffee in the urns, right? And sometimes you get a little bit of the burnt coffee on the urn, but not so much that was a pleasant taste, but there was an actual interesting aroma to it that almost had a sweetness to it. And that's kind of what – I really like the aroma on this cigar. I think it's very, very underrated. I get all the notes you talked about, Aaron, for sure. I get that smoothness on the retro, but there's an aroma on that cigar. It's a wonderful cigar to just puff on and get nice billowing smoke around with it.
Yep, I agree.
Yep.
And I like the Toro because you get a nice longer smoking experience with it as well.
That's the only drawback of the Corona, Enrique. It's just small. Because I love the Corona. Yeah, that's the only drawback.
Well, that's why I get a Balancero. It's a little bit longer.
Yep. Exactly. And that's a true box press Lancero you got. Excellent. Definitely, folks, check out the 1502 line of cigars. You know, you got in addition to Black Gold. I think I'm gonna get them all right, Enrique. Emerald, Ruby, Black Gold, Nicaragua, Blue Sapphire, and XO.
And the 1502 XO.
I didn't miss anything, did I?
No, not yet.
The new stuff that you don't know about.
They won't. The stuff that wait.
The magic one.
I'll say Enrique always has a surprise at IPCPR. He always kind of catches us off guard, so we'll see.
Well,
even though you announced the Blue Sapphire a couple days in advance, I did not realize it was not box pressed.
Aha! See, it's always a surprise.
It's always a surprise. Yeah, I remember one year you came out with the 1502 Nicaragua Churchill, which I love, right?
Yes.
And I don't, I think, yeah, I hadn't seen a Churchill out of you in a while, so that was really good.
See, that's the beauty of having different blends and different sizes. I mean, it's that, like I said, when I'm blending, I always see all the sizes, so I know which one goes better in that blend. So it's good to have the buyer ready. That's yep. One of the key things.
Exactly. Exactly. Will Cooper, Aaron Loomis, episode 7 of the Primetime Show. We're here with Enrique Sanchez, the founder and CEO of 1502 Cigars. We'll get into our final segment, which is our deliberation segment. And this segment is brought to you by Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saca set out to create Puro Sin Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saca's closely held values and attests in three simple words everything Saca wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion to Saca, they are a way of life. Ask for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sober Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, and Muestra de Saca, your local tobacconist. And by Mbombay Cigars. Mbombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. Mbombay Cigars are then rolled in Costa Rica by some of the most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The bands portray the artistic and detailed nature of our small industry. Try the Mbombay and the new Gaia lines. Mbombay Cigars, where the cigars are a way of life. And by MLB Cigar Ventures. Fueled by his passion in the cigar industry, Mike Bellady has realized in order to bring the best premium cigars to market, he had to collaborate with the best minds in the cigar industry. With MLB Cigar Ventures, Mike teams up with Ernesto Perez Carrillo Jr. to bring you the David P. Elric line of cigars, and Manuel Manolo Quesada to bring you Imperia, Imperia Islero, and the new Imperia Aventador. The cigars of MLB Cigar Ventures, developed by legends and smoked by connoisseurs. So welcome, everyone, back to the Primetime Show. We're in our final segment here. Will Cooper, Aaron Loomis here with Enrique Sanchez of 1502 Cigars. And I titled this segment tonight, The FDA 1 Year Later. And we're actually a couple of weeks late with this segment because it was on May 5th, Thursday, May 5th, 2016. Yeah, everyone's Cinco de Mayo was ruined. I will never forget that day. I know what I was doing that day. I was in New Jersey, and I had been working in New Jersey from Monday to Wednesday. The night before, the Wednesday night was the night that Trump, Ted Cruz dropped out of the race, and I was heading up to Rhode Island to go up to my old show, the Stogie Geeks, to meet up with Paul and the crew. And literally, I get in the car and I start getting the messages saying, "This is coming down. It's coming down bad." So that was what I was doing that day, and it's over a year later right now. So it's hard to believe it's a year.
Yeah.
It's interesting because now we have a. I'll kind of set the table, and then we could just open it up for some comments. There's a couple. I'm not gonna judge whether it's gotten better or worse. Are we better off than we were a year ago? My answer is the regulations are still there. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen is obviously we've talked about Enrique's lawsuit, Enrique, Jim Robinson, and Luis Falto's lawsuit. We've talked about the cigar industry lawsuits. We have seen a change in the presidential administration, which – whether or not that's going to be a positive, people are looking at it as a positive. I can't say that yet. And I'll have more, we'll comment more on that. There's a couple of other things that have gone on. There's been some delays, which I think the delays, if you follow this, were not surprises to a lot of people. So we've seen some things get delayed. We've seen some things get implemented already. We've seen the age requirement thing, which really was now something under the FDA jurisdiction. That was implemented. We've seen the ACE date kind of go into effect. So now, and in August 8th, you can't just bring a car to market. We've seen a lot of ways to work within that framework. I'm not saying it's good or bad. And now we're seeing warning label, the warning label piece come in. So that's going to be something for next year. I don't think that's going away. And then the final thing, what I'll just say, just kind of, again, throwing out these various things, is the packaging, there was a court ruling on packaging, which I think has changed a little bit of the game, where now folks can change the packaging of a cigar. They just can't change the quantity of the box counts, which maybe that came from a very unlikely source, the cigarette industry. Mm-hmm. So we've seen some things have happened since then, but ultimately I look at this and I say, we are still regulated. So in my opinion, I don't know if we're better off than we were a year ago.
Yeah. I don't really see anything that makes us think that anything is different for the better. I mean, cigars still had the deadline of when they needed to be out in the market to be able to continue on for a couple more years. But, you know, other than that, some of these things just, you know, the delays don't, you know, the new administration kind of putting a little bit of a hold on things, but everything else, it's kind of still, you know, on the same path to where it was supposed to go.
Yep.
No, indeed. Yep. I mean, the storm is right in front of your door. I mean, that's a matter of if
Uh-oh. We froze Enrique.
Yeah.
Just as he was going to say something good.
Yep. Hopefully he's able to make it back in.
No, but yeah, I do think that we're not, like I said, I kind of go back to the administration, which Enrique was just saying. And look, at the end of the day, if that lawsuit happens, and like I said, I'm still on the record saying it ain't happening. And I'm talking about the CRA, CAA, IPCPR one. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who's the FDA commissioner, right now still on the other end of that lawsuit.
Right.
So he's still got to defend that for his agency right now, is the way I look at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell, you know, what's going to happen there. Like you said, his role is to fight for the regulations. Now, whether or not he just, you know, brings some common sense into that and say, all right, we shouldn't really push on these ones. We should focus on other things and then go down that route. You know, I think that's kind of best case scenario that we can expect from that. But they're still going to keep pushing for it.
I agree. Let me, you know, I kind of go back. I was going to ask you guys this question. What were you doing the day the regulations got announced?
I don't think I was doing anything special. I was just following along as the news was coming out, and kind of getting, you know, trying to gather feedback from what other people were thinking about it, or, you know, or their thoughts on what was going on. But it really seemed like, you know, it was a very dark and kind of gloomy day based on, you know, everybody's comments.
It was dark and gloomy when I did that ride from Rhode Island to, from New Jersey to Rhode Island. It literally was a dark and gloomy day. It was it was just miserable weather. Because you were on the West Coast, did you wake up and find it? Because we were up, and then, you know, people ping me, you know, various people ping me because they think I'm in the know, and I'm really not in the know. It's just when they ping me is when I become in the know.
Right.
And I was made aware that something was happening that day.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of got up, did my normal routine in the morning and kind of, you know, visited various sites and things like that. And, you know, the talk was already rumbling. So, you know, being on the West Coast, I kind of had there was a little bit of delay from, you know, what was people on the East Coast that had already been up for a little while. So there was definitely some talk going on about it.
Yep. Yeah. And that's kind of what, like I said, and then, you know, it was very interesting. I think Enrique's trying to join back in.
I am here.
There was, there you go.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, welcome back.
Sorry, I had my iPad ran out of battery, so I had to switch device.
That was fast thinking. But yeah, I have an iPad here, and it's like almost dead too, so it's kind of funny. But no, we appreciate it. Enrique, I was just asking Aaron. I'll ask you, what do you remember what you were doing the day the regulations came out?
Yeah, of course, crying.
Well, yeah, I mean,
no, to be honest, I do not remember exactly what I was doing, but I do remember how I was feeling, and which was not very pleasant.
What was the first thing you like? What was your first thing you did, like once this thing dropped? I mean, what was your first as a manufacturer? What was the first thing you went to do?
Research. I want to go and get okay. get the more information that I could. Actually, of course, they contact Frank Herrera, lawyer, and see what's going on. He was like, okay, guys, don't bother me. I have 300 and something pages to read. Let me first go over this, and then, you know, I can go and answer all the questions you need to answer. So, yeah, it was not a pleasant moment, that's for sure.
Interesting. You know, it's yeah, like I said, it was a miserable day all around, and I had a guest on that night, and it was actually the JRE Tobacco guys, and they're a new company, so I really felt bad for them. But but I think you know, we talked about though the packaging changes, and it's interesting. I go back to that piece again. If there's anything that kind of maybe changed things up a bit, was possibly the packaging changes where they did rule you can change a label on a cigar or a box design.
Well, not quite that strong. I mean, they say that you cannot change anything. For small changes, they ruled and they said, yes, you're allowed to do small changes.
So it's not
you cannot repackage it. You cannot change your logo. You can change the tone of color. For example, if it's a red, you can come a little bit lighter, a little bit stronger red, or you can make your logo a little bit smaller, a little bit bigger in that aspect. But you cannot make a bigger changes in that aspect. So don't think about it. It's that you can go now and do whatever package you want. No. It's not the case.
Interesting. So I'm glad you clarified that for me, because I'm seeing I'm seeing this notion, Enrique, of predicate blends, and people are trying to get to these predicate blends, which are blends that are before February 15, 2007, and trying to see if they can bring them to market.
Yep.
So I'm seeing a lot of people do things like that, where some of the factories that have a lot more blends may be able to do things like that now.
Of course, you know, there were some blends in which they die in years, and now they're trying to renew the blend. The problem with that is that when you read the FDA regulation, they make very clear that it has to be a grandfather day brand or blend. It has to be before February 2007, and it's still on the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it had to be on. Yeah, that's a big point.
So it's that they can still go after that and say, wait a second, yeah, you had a blend before, but it was no longer in the market for 5 years or 7 years or 10 years. So technically, you are dead. So you can go back and forth and fight it by going back to the one of the main problem. I mean, it goes back to resources. How much resources you're going to need to actually go or to court to do this, and take it for my word, it's not that cheap. So it's a tricky one.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's good, and that's where a lot of the smaller companies are clearly at a disadvantage here.
Yeah. So that's why I was waiting for those big companies actually to step in and do five more. They have a lot more cash flow in their pocket than the small companies. But until today, I haven't seen that.
No, I agree. The industry, you know, I remember, again, we're going back a year. There was probably about a 6 week period after that, and this is kind of where your lawsuit. I remember your lawsuit came around in early June, I think it was. So it was very quick. You got that launched pretty quick.
Yeah, I remember, there was no time to waste.
Yeah. No, there were definitely not. But I remember there was a huge backlash. I mean, Aaron and I did a show. We talked about that back. It was a huge backlash right now. It was ugly.
Yeah.
You know, where and I think there was some. I don't want to say I hate to use the word justification, but there was clearly, you know, when I looked at some of the other industries that were involved with this, like vape, we were clearly behind the eight ball. There was no question about it.
Oh, no doubt whatsoever. I mean, one of the saddest part in this is that since I joined the industry, I've been here, it's coming. And now we see it in front. And like, well, you had 7 years or 8 years to prepare. Why are you not prepared?
We got to have a meeting. We got to have a meeting to figure out our strategy.
It's like,
I just don't think it was the right answer.
You should have been prepared right away. I mean, and that's one of the things when we sit down with Frank, we analyze this. Like, well, we have to do something about this. I mean, at least mark the way. And if we can win the lawsuit, I mean, it's going to be a win for everybody. Now, not only for my company, the entire industry will be winning.
Right. But I remember, I had talked to you and Frank with Smooth Drawers. I remember I was in the studio that day. And I remember, you know,
yeah,
obviously there were a lot of people who didn't want that lawsuit to happen. And I remember what Frank said to me when I asked him that question. He said, hey, I got to look after my job is to, you know, represent my clients and protect their interests. And it was right on. Yeah.
Well, trust me, I had a lot of people contact me and saying, you know, not nice things about it and telling me, you know, for the good of the industry, yes, drop the lawsuit, you crazy. I mean, there were not a lot of, there were not only cheerings or happiness behind that, you know, there was a lot of things, not good hopes behind it. And that was sad.
It was.
You know, one of the other things that's kind of happened since then is that we've kind of started recently seeing some of the grandfather products being identified. You know, some of those pre-predicate blends that are, you know, being logged in the database that, you know, these qualify and these are, you know, good to go and going forward. So, I mean, there's a little bit of progress in regards to that, but it's, you know, them having to file for that and then get the approval through the FDA. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot more of that coming through as well.
Here's the one catch with that, Aaron. This is how I understand it, is that you don't have to technically do that. Mm. So that's an optional activity. They call it a determination as opposed to an approval.
Right.
But from what I understand, it's an optional activity that the FDA is not expecting a plethora of these things. Mm. So if someone's looking for a particular blend and waiting for it to show up, it may not. The good news is I think there's been some precedent set that, okay, the FDA has, and it, but they've, I think Frank even said some of these took a long time to get determined. Right. So, but it's basically, you could, if you think it's still grandfathered, that's fine. But if you get called out on it, you have to be able to, you're going to be able to have to demonstrate it. Mm-hmm. So it's like Enrique said, if it's something that you're playing a game with right now, you know, it may not be something that you technically could do. So I'm not sure everyone understands that rule, but that's how I understood the grandfather rule.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know if there's going to be at some point, you know, there's a benefit to having done that. So I don't know if you're just kind of, you know, being safe by getting that process underway rather than kind of just sitting back and, you know, not going through the process. So
I thought it was interesting. There was a few of them out there, but there were two that were very different. There was Eddie Ortega, had a couple of lines that were, he wasn't doing much with those lines. I mean, I think if they were in market, they were very small production,
mm-hmm.
Rio and Vibe.
Right.
And then Altidus had a couple of, they were picking select sizes off some of their bigger lines,
mm-hmm.
You know, but it wasn't like whole lines. It was just like one Vitola. I wondered if they would test in the waters with that. Right. Is what I was wondering. Well, okay, let's just do a few of these and see what happens. So I was kind of curious to see where they were heading with that.
Yeah, and another interesting thing is kind of under the substantial equivalency process is that Andrew Wood of Tabacos Mundial, who's an importer, he seems to have a pretty interesting thought that it's a pretty simple process of what's necessary to kind of apply for that. So he's gone through and done that for all of his clients to put that process through. And I think he's just kind of waiting to see if those get approved or not. And if his process is correct, it doesn't take a lot to make that happen. He's just doing the very basics, as it's the tobacco, it's the water, and that's pretty much it. And I think he's kind of pairing that up with a grandfather product to be able to say that, you know, these cigars are kind of matching the overall construction of these grandfather products, and that's going to be enough to get it through. So if any of those get approved, I think that there might be a flood of people that start applying using that simple method.
Yeah, I know Andrew reached out about possibly getting on the show. I know he's done a couple of others, so we'll have to get him on and kind of go through that in some more detail with him.
Yeah, he did a good episode of Cigar Chat.
Yep.
On Cigar Federation, where they talked about that, and he kind of went through the whole process of what it's been. And I've actually had some kind of Facebook Messenger discussions with him and Riste from Jessam Crawl, because that's who Riste goes through for importing. And all Riste stuff has been kind of submitted using that process, so they're kind of waiting to see. I think that was one of the first ones that Andrew submitted.
Yeah, Riste is going to be on in 2 weeks. So. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely have some more, I'm sure, to talk about with him on that. So, you know, that's a good point as well. I mean, I think there's a lot of unknowns with substantial equivalents. Still, I mean, obviously cost is still there. What you just talked about is a big question mark if Andrew is right on his assumption there. And, you know, the only thing that's interesting about this delay that's happened is the FDA hasn't published the full guidance on substantial equivalence yet. So this is a typical FDA. They put something out there, but the devil in the details come later on. So that's delayed that process 90 days. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing either. Right. Kind of one part of me is it's a good thing. The bad part of it is it's kind of like, are you going to really make us wait another 90 days before you tell us what our sentence is? You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like, you know, So I don't know if that's a good thing. I mean, Enrique, I got to ask you a question about the delays.
Sure.
Because there's been some controversy about that too. Do you think the delays are a good thing, or do you think that it's like you've already done some costs to kind of meet these deadlines and now they get pushed out? You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, from my point of view, delays are definitely they're good. I mean, it's a lot more costly to not have the delay. That's for sure. I mean, it's if we can delay this longer, the better it is for the market. That's for me. There's no doubt.
Yeah, I tell people, you know, I look at the menthol debate with cigarettes, and how long that went. This is a long battle that's coming.
Oh yes, oh yes.
This is not something. Yeah, this is a long battle. So I don't think we'll be in dire straits in a year from now. But at the same time, I don't think we're going to – I mean, there's a lot of things that got to happen right now. And so, you know, now, like I said, now is the time to act is what I'll say.
Oh, last year would have been the best time to act, but it's never too late.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Another question I have, another thought is – the trade show.
Yes.
Do you think the trade show will change after this year? A lot of people saying this could be the last hurrah.
I don't know about the last one, but well, you know, it's one of the things we always, as a humankind in any form, we have made changes everywhere. I mean, what we do, we adjust to the changes.
That's a good point.
Do I see this like the end? No. No, simple. You adjust and keep moving forward. That's no doubt.
And one other interesting thing is that the joint lawsuit with the CRA, CAA, and IPCPR, that got pushed back to after the trade show. So I think that'll be a little interesting, because now, depending on how that progresses, you know,
well,
whatever happens.
Well, that's pushed back to the end of the year.
And now it's it's down to the end of the year?
Well, it was originally pushed back after the trade show.
Right.
They agreed, and now it was pushed back another 90 days. So it may not – they haven't named the new date of that. It may not happen until December or January next year.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, you're going into the trade show this year, you know, not knowing, and then you may find out later in the year kind of what happens with that, if it even moves forward at all.
Yeah. It's
there's nothing else. I mean, we're still in the same way. A lawsuit went before them, and we're still waiting for a first audience in court. Mm-hmm. They haven't put a date.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of steps that have to happen before you get to those opening arguments in any lawsuit.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's been interesting for me because I kind of am a cigar, you want to say I'm quasi cigar media or whatever. My expertise is kind of smoking a cigar and informing people about product. And kind of last year, I had to put on this different hat where I had to kind of now start reading legal documents to inform people. And that's been tough. And I'm not an expert. Yeah.
We all have been doing that. Trust me.
Yeah, we all had to do it. It was a different
habit. On the factory, I had to go to the law school just about to learn how to do this. Right. So you now have been the only one.
Yeah, I almost went to law school. I came very close. I last minute. I had a job I was making good money at, and I didn't want to give it up. But yeah, so maybe I should have did it. I was thinking. Yeah. Yeah. So I think we have, in terms of moving forward, I think there's a very, I don't want to say there's a roadmap, but there's an interesting road ahead. Is what I'll say. You haven't heard, it's going to be a lot of peaks and valleys we're going to hit over the next few weeks, I think, or a few months on this, a few years. But certainly, Aaron, anything else you want to add on that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, Enrique, anything else?
No, it's simple. It's going to be, like you said before, a long battle. We definitely have to hope for the best, prepare for the worst. But, whatever happens, we will still be here. It's not like we're going to go anywhere. We would adjust to the new regulation, adjust to the new rules, and carry on, continue.
So we will see lots of 1502 for a long time to come, which is
yes.
And that's really refreshing to hear, because if you hear people sometimes saying, well, maybe I'll get out and stuff, but it really refreshing to hear that you're committed to the industry on that.
No. When I started this, I said it from the beginning. I started this to leave a legacy behind for my kids, and hopefully for the kids that, for their kids as well. So I'm here for the long run. Yeah. It's not. This is not scaring me out.
Yeah, and so is this show, by the way. So I just started this show, so we're at episode 7. So I want to get to that 200 club of the shows, which is before we kind of close out and like thank Enrique, Aaron, what is happening on developing palettes?
We had a contest going on right now for the Ventura Cigars archetype initiation.
What a great! I saw your review and I've smoked that great cigar.
Yeah, so we're giving away a 10 pack of those cigars in the original box. So people just head over to the site. There's a banner on the top. They can easily get into that. A bunch of different ways to enter. And that'll wrap up on Sunday. And then we'll pick a winner and we'll ship that out next week.
That's great. Like I said, I smoke. That's one of the Drew Estate blends. And I think it's one of the best blends they've done for someone else. I mean, it's really a good cigar.
Yeah, I think it's the best archetype that I've smoked so far.
I'm like with that and the Sage Advice of the two. I think I really like Sage Advice.
Yeah. But yeah, it was the best one I've smoked so far. It's a very interesting cigar because you get, pre-light, you get a bunch of kind of, I want to say, kind of campfire, fire-cured type notes from the tobacco at the foot. But you don't really necessarily get that when you smoke the cigar. So it's a fairly interesting cigar.
I agree. I thought it was really good, really good. And I've been impressed with them in the line as a whole. For folks, a couple of folks asked me, I'm out of challenge coins right now. So the folks at Northwest Territorial Mint and Andrew Columbia, who's my brother from another mother, he is working to get me a new replenishment of these coins. They went very quick. I don't even have mine. I had to give mine away.
You gave yours away?
I had to give mine away.
Don't make me give mine away, Coop.
No. So, and I'm gonna be giving some out to people at IPP. Oh, you're getting one in Vegas. Everyone, we're gonna have Enrique. We're gonna smoke 1502 with the challenge coins, and we'll get the pictures and everything.
All right, like it.
So
I
have a big order of them coming. They went very fast, and that's why there was no contest tonight because I have none to give. I had to literally give my last one out to someone, because they went so fast, and so there will be more challenge coins coming. Next week we got a couple of good reviews coming out. We have the Davidoff Nicaragua box press, 6x6. He's going to be one of them. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be getting into Cigar Coop IPCBR coverage. I think the IPCBR stories will start breaking right after Memorial Day. So it's been a little late. I think people will wait until after Memorial Day this year, it seems like. Last year it started very early, I think, with FDA. But this year I think it will kind of get back more into that June cycle where we'll start seeing the stories. So, Enrique, first of all, thank you very, very much. I'm glad we got you on. I'm glad we worked out the day and the technical problems. And it was – I really appreciate – we both appreciate the opportunity here.
Yep, absolutely.
No, it has been my pleasure. It's been always my privilege to be with you guys. Coop, Aaron, thank you very much for having me over. And, you know, it would be anything I can do to help, support. And, guys, remember, it's not a cigar. It's a 1502.
There you go. Relax and enjoy, everyone. All right. That concludes episode 7. We'll see everyone next week. Our guest is James Brown. So state of Black Label Trading Company. So with that, everyone, have a great night.